All right. Good afternoon. It is September 7th, Wednesday, 1 o'clock, and we're doing a lecture for Chem 30A. So, coming back off of my break there, and an unfortunate health issue. I wound up catching COVID this last week, and so I've been recovering from that a little bit, but everything seems to be going well. So we're going to jump back into it now. And I'm going to start doing these lectures synchronously every Tuesday and Thursday at 1 o'clock, 1 to 2:30. We'll have these lectures. And if you want to join, you're more than welcome to join. Even if you're coming in late and you want to join in the middle of a lecture or jump in at any part of it, you're more than welcome to do that. The more questions that I get during the lecture, the better these lectures are going to be. That's what really makes them good, is your participation. So I'm happy to have anybody who wants to jump in and participate. I encourage you guys to do so. The content will only get better. It will only be better for you as you get your questions answered. So more face time with me, the better. But I also know that this is an asynchronous course, and you guys signed on to this because you want to do it in your own time frame. And many of you have work commitments and other family commitments and things, and I certainly respect those as well. So I'm here to support you in whatever mode you need to be supported. That's the main thing. All right, so I had a couple of lectures that were old lectures that I had put up online just to get us rolling while I was out of town. And now we're going to narrow in this content a little bit more specifically for the Chem 30A class. And we're going to pick up where I left off. So we had already done sig figs. We had already done measurement. We had done a number of different important concepts in the first couple of videos. Today, what we're going to pick up with is looking at calculations. How do we perform calculations? A system that we like to call dimensional analysis is one of the main things that we're going to look at. And how do we take some of these word problems that tend to be the really difficult problems and convert them into something that is easier to understand? And so that's the whole system that I want to teach you today. It's called dimensional analysis. So let me go ahead, start a screen share, switch over to my iPad, do the drawing application. And we'll get right into it. All right, hang tight while I make some adjustments here on screen sharing. All right, so Chem 30A, September 7th, 2022 lecture. As I said, what I want to hit today, I'll just take it from the outline that I've got here. We want to do problem solving. Specifically, dimensional analysis. We're also going to take a look at temperature, density, specific gravity, a few key concepts that need to be in there as well. And I know that we already, I had the lab up there for density, and specific gravity wasn't really a part of that, but we'll look at how specific gravity plays into things as well. It's very similar to density, very much related to density, only we use specific gravity more for liquids, the density of liquids, and it's a way of relating the density of an object back to the density of water. And it's temperature dependent, and we'll see how we use that too. So that's kind of what I want to hit today and where I want to go. So let's start off with this idea of problem solving. Most of the problems that we get within chemistry come in the way of a word problem. Rather than a math problem where you see a mathematical representation, most of the chemistry problems tend to be word problems. And so when we get a word problem, they can be simple word problems where they can ask you to just convert one measurement into from one unit to another type of unit. So these may be conversions of a measurement. Into a different unit. or they may be more complicated. And they may have to do with solving for an unknown or something. But the fact that they're addressed as a word problem oftentimes throws everybody into a tizzy, because you're looking at a word problem and you're trying to figure out, what is it that I need to do? What is it that I'm looking for? And what information in the problem do I need to use? And is there any information that is not given in the problem that I also need to know? So those are the types of things that come up with word problems that make them complicated. And what I like to do is I like to take a roadmap approach. So I think of a word problem as a city that I need to navigate, and like a location, an address where I need to go in a city that I'm not very familiar with. And the first thing that I'm going to do anytime I get an issue like that, where I'm trying to find an address in a city that I'm unfamiliar with, is I pull up a map. Look at the map and I figure out, well, where is it on the map? And I ask Google to give me the directions. The roadmap tells you how to get there. Building a roadmap to the word problem is an essential skill to tackling the word problem. And so we use this roadmap approach. And so we need to look at how do we build roadmaps? Let's start off with a simple sort of problem. Let me give an example. We'll go through how we tackle this very simple example, and then we'll break it down into each one of the components and what they are. So let's say that we want to convert let's say 37.6 inches. Into centimeters. So a very simple idea here of being able to convert inches to centimeters. What we need to do is we need to first think about what we call conversion factors. Conversion factors are equal measurements that occur on different rulers. So if I look at an inch ruler and I lay out an inch ruler and say this is one, this is two, this is three and four, these are in inches. And then I lay out another ruler and this is in centimeters. I would have 1 centimeter, 2 centimeters, 3 centimeters, 4, 5, 6, and I may not be hitting it just where I want to, but the centimeter is a whole lot smaller than an inch. And if I take and I look at where 1 inch is and where that same measurement is on the centimeter ruler, what I find is when I align those two rulers and I align the zero marks and I make sure that these guys are right starting at the same spot here, what I find is that 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters. And we call this an equality. We also give it another name. We call it a conversion factor. It's a measurement that allows inequality between one system of measure and another system of measure. This would be the English system. And the SI system, System International, oftentimes also called the metric system. Although metric doesn't really, it's really the System International. Metric is really about powers of 10, but the System International is about the units that are applied, not the powers of 10. The System International really decides on what the value of a meter is, what the value of a gram is, what the value of all of these different units of measure. They determine those things. The metric system just means that it's based in powers of 10. So what this does is this allows us to be able to convert back and forth between English and SI. And the way that we would go about doing that is we set up a roadmap. That's the way that I start with it. So here would be the roadmap. The roadmap says I'm starting with English. This is in inches. And I desire to go to SI in terms of centimeters. And the arrow, this thing here, the arrow represents the conversion factor. Now, this seems very simple. That conversion factor can be written as the equality, 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters. And as I said, that's really what that arrow is representing, is that ability to have something that converts me from one to the other. Now, roadmaps like this, where it's just one step, are very simple, but oftentimes what we will do, we'll string together many of these roadmaps with many conversion factors to be able to complete a problem. And then once I do that, the way that I build the problem is I build it this way. I start off with a given conversion factor or a given value. Let's call it a given unit. And I'm going to some desired unit. And the way that I get there is I use an equality and I multiply this thing by an equality, a conversion factor that converts the one unit into the other. How do I actually accomplish that? What I do is I take the given unit and I put the given unit in the denominator. So this part, whatever this unit is, this goes in the denominator. And whatever it is that I desire, this desired unit, this goes in the numerator. And the values that are this part come from this equality. So here's an example. What we're going to do is we're going to take our question. We're going to take 37.6 inches and convert it into centimeters. So as I start to build this mathematical problem, this given part, 37.6 inches, and I'll just double check and make sure that I grab the right thing, 37.6 inches, and then I'm going to multiply it. And I'm going to put inches in the denominator. I'm going to put my desired unit, which is centimeters. I want centimeters out there. I'll put centimeters in my numerator. Again, following that pattern. And then what I do is I look at that equality that I was given. 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters. And I put the value with whichever unit it goes with. So one goes with inches and 2.54 goes with centimeters. One goes with inches and 2.54 goes with centimeters. And now it's a mathematical problem. Now what I do is I multiply 37.6 times 2.54 and I divide by one and I'll get whatever result comes out here. So mathematically, I'll write it out this way. mathematically, this looks like this. 37.6 inches times 2.54 centimeters. And then this gets divided by 1 inch. And the units, because if I think about this as being in the numerator, inches and inches, units cancel each other out. And centimeters is the only unit that's left, and it's left in the numerator. And so whatever value comes out of this is going to be centimeters. 37.6 times 2.54 divided by 1. 95.504. Okay, but the problem isn't done yet, because if you've watched some of the other videos where we talked about numbers and we talked about significant figures, we know that I need to look at how many significant figures this problem actually needs to have. And so in terms of looking at sig figs, what I would do is go through and look at how many sig figs each one of the values in this mathematical problem have. 37.6 has 3 sig figs. 2.54 has 3 sig figs associated with it. And the one that's in the denominators, those guys really don't count. Those are, for lack of a better word, the sig figs are carried in the part that has the decimal component of the conversion factor. And so I'm going to be looking for 3 sig figs in my answer. And the way that I do that is count out 1, 2, 3, just starting from left to right, drop down my line, look at where I'm going to do my rounding, and then I round out the answer, 95.5 centimeters. And that would be a complete way in which I would go through and do that or structure that problem. So 37.6 inches is equal to 95.5 centimeters. And we've gone through and shown how we take the word problem and break it down. So let's take another one. Let's do a slightly more complicated one, and let's go through all the same process. And then we'll write down what that actual process is and make a checklist of all the things that we need to do. And we'll do one that has a slightly longer roadmap. So here's another example. Let's do another measurement one, but let's do something that is a little bit longer. Let's do something that may be in yards. So how many meters are in, let's pick a number that is in the hundreds. Let's do 372.7 yards. Okay. I may have to give you some additional conversion factors here in order to be able to do this. So let's give you some conversion factors that we can use. 1 yard equals 3 feet. Every 1 foot equals 12 inches. And for every 1 inch, it equals 2.54 centimeters. And we'll maybe need one more here, that there are 100 centimeters is equal to 1 meter. Okay, now some of these, I'm gonna ask you to memorize at some point. But for right now, we'll just write them all down so that we have them all. And the steps to solving a problem, the way that I like to solve the problem is, number one, I like to parse the problem. If By that, I mean identify the given, the desired, and any conversion factors or equalities. Let's put equalities and conversion factors together, although I think of them as being different. I'll tell you why in a little bit. So we do that. We parse the problem. Number two, we make a roadmap. Number three, identify required equalities. If not provided. Then what we do is we construct the problem. We do the math. And number six, we always come back and look at sig figs and make sure that we address the sig figs. That's all the steps. There might be a couple of other little construction steps that might help, but those are the main steps. So when I go through and I do that and I look at that and I think about, all right, my given, I'm always going to sort of track in blue. What is my given? My given here is 372.7 yards. That's what I'm being asked to convert. My desired, what is it that I desire? Wrong color. My desired is that I'm always reading into how many or what, whenever I see what or how many or something like that, the next thing that follows that, meters, that's what it is that I'm really desiring there is in meters. And then those equalities, I always sort of map out in green as the equalities. And the equalities here are given to me. And these guys are all of the equalities. They're going to help me to perform that. And again, in my roadmap, these are going to represent my lines from unit to unit as I move from place to place. Okay, so I've identified each one of my parts in this. And as I start to think about my roadmap and how my roadmap is going to come together, I'm going from yards to meters. And I can do this with words or abbreviations. So if I just want to do the units, yards, YDS, if I want to do meters, I'm going to meters. And then if I have a conversion factor that can take me all the way there in one step, if I have something that says some number of yards equals some number of meters, and I know what that is, and I can go there in one step, that's great. But most of the time, I can't get there in one step. Most of the time, based on the information that they're going to give me, I'm going to have to break it up. And so what I do is I go back and I look at the things that they gave me. From yards, wherever it is that I'm starting, I look for that unit and I look up here in my equalities and I find whatever it equals, and it looks like it goes to feet. So what I can do is I can go from yards to feet and I have that equality. I have that 1 yard equals 3 feet. And that represents the first arrow. Then I start looking through the conversion factors again, and I find another one that has feet in it. And feet allows me to go to inches. So I will go from feet to inches. So I have 1 foot equals 12 inches. I'll go back to my conversion factors, look and see what I've got. I've got inches that go to centimeters. So from inches, I can go to centimeters. And for every 1 inch, it equals 2.54 centimeters. And then lastly, I do have an equality that takes me from centimeters to meters. And so I can fill in this last arrow that there are 100 centimeters in 1 meter. And now I have a roadmap that's complete. It takes me from whatever I was given, the yards, to whatever I desire, meters, and I have all the steps in between. And I don't write an arrow unless I know what the equality is that the arrow represents. And if I need to go to the textbook and look for it, or I need to look for it in some other place, then that allows me to be able to construct the arrow and to construct the problem. But I need to find that conversion factor and make sure that I write it down before I write down the arrow. And now that I've gone through, I've parsed my problem. So I've done step one. I've found my given, my desired, and the different equalities that were there. I have drawn out my roadmap. Now, identify required equalities if not provided. What that means is, let's say that I didn't give you 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters, and it wasn't given in the problem. In order to go from inches to centimeters, I would have to go in the textbook and look that up, or look it up online, or find it someplace before I could fill in this and complete it. So what that means is that if there's any missing steps, any missing equalities, to make sure that you identify them before moving on to constructing the problem. We don't have any missing, so we're going to check it off. Now we're going to construct the problem. We're going to construct it exactly the same way that we did last time. We're just going to use multiple conversion factors strung together. So we get our measurement first, 372.7 yards. 372.7. The multiplication sign represents the first step in our roadmap, and it represents the equality that is sitting here, 1 yard equals 3 feet. So we can think about these as each little individual steps, my given in yards and my desired going to feet. What I said is I always take the given, and the given always goes down in the denominator. So the way that I construct this is I take this yards, and I put that unit in the denominator so that it's going to cancel with the unit that I was given. And I take my desired feet and I put it in the numerator so that yards will be converted into feet. And then I take a look at the equality and I put the value with the correct unit. 1 goes with yards, 3 goes with feet. And that's how I know what goes in the numerator and what goes in the denominator. What that means is mathematically, I cancel from numerator to denominator, and I get rid of yards. And now I'm at this point in my roadmap, I'm at feet. So I'm going to take feet as my new given, and I'm going to move to my next step, to inches. So what I'll do there is I'll take feet, and this one will be pushed down into the denominator. And my next one on my roadmap, inches, goes in my numerator. I take a look at the equality, and I place the values with the correct units. 1 foot goes with 12 inches. There's no magic to it. It's a straight up system. All I'm doing is just following the system. And I keep moving forward. Feet now cancel, and I am now in inches. Next conversion factor. Now I'm going to take inches, and inches is going to go in my denominator. Centimeters, my new desired, is going to go in my numerator. And again, with the values, 1 inch, 2.54 centimeters. I have now crossed off inches, and I'm in centimeters. And then I do one more. So now centimeters goes in my denominator, as you're seeing the pattern. My ultimate desired goes in my numerator, meters. And for every 100 centimeters, it is 1 meter. Centimeters have canceled. And I am now in units of meters. And those meters are in the numerator. Mathematically, what I'm going to do now, in order to solve this problem, we've written out the problem. It's all written out correctly. There's a couple of different ways that I can punch it into the calculator, and I can do it in any of the ways that I so desire. Some of the ways that I can take and I can write this is I could say that this first thing that I started with over here is really over one. And so this problem goes and looks like this, 372.7. I'm just going to use the numbers now about how I punch it into the calculator. So I'm going to leave the units out of it. Times 3, times 12, times 2.54, times 1. And in the denominator, this would be 1 times 1 times 1 times 1. Actually, I'm going to line them up underneath their parts so they don't get confusing. 1 times 1 times 1 times 1 times 100. You are welcome to do this mathematical problem in a number of different ways. It can be entered into the calculator a couple of different ways. There's one way that I like in particular that makes it a whole lot easier. The first thing that I do is anything that's a 1, I just ignore it. Because anything multiplied by 1 or divided by 1 doesn't change the value. That means that in the numerator now, I have 372.7 times 3 times 12 times 2.54. And I can calculate out that numerator part. And then I can come back and I can divide it by 100 as the denominator part. So I can enter it this way. I can say 372.7 times 3 times 12 times 2.54. And then I can divide by 100. Anything in the denominator, I get to hit the division key. So here we go. 372.7 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 divided by 100. That comes out to 340.79688. And at this point, I might go back and put the units on it, just to remind myself that those are the units that are associated with it, that I have now converted this into meters. And now that I have the answer, the next thing to do is to go through and to do the sig figs. So when we look at sig figs, remember that the idea behind sig figs is to be able to accurately determine how much uncertainty is in the answer, really. It's how good is the answer to a problem. And the answer can only be as good as the data that went into that. So when I look back at these numbers, and we've talked about sig figs in some of the other videos that we did. The sig figs in the first part of the problem here, 372.7 yards. This is a value that was a measured value. All measured values are going to have sig figs associated with them. And this is going to be 4 sig figs in that 372.7. Then I start looking at the sig figs that are associated with these different conversion factors. And here I need to have a little bit of understanding of what these conversion factors are and how many sig figs are involved in each of them. Some of these are exact. For instance, this one, 1 yard and 3 feet. This is what's called an exact conversion factor. Exact meaning that it has an infinite number of sig figs. It's a definition. That's another way that we could put it. that 1 yard and 3 feet are both part of the English unit of measure. There is exactly 3 feet in 1 yard, no more, no less. There is not a fraction or some decimal equivalent. They are part of the same system, and they are defined to be exactly exact. It's the best way to say it. And so because of that, they have an infinite number of sig figs, and they don't change the sig fig outcome. So when we get down here and we get a conversion factor like this that is within the same unit of measure, we say this is exact. And that means that it will not affect our sig fig outcome. We're allowed to ignore it. Feet to inches is exactly the same way. It is also exact, part of the same definition. Inches to 2.54 centimeters. I'm going to come back to that one in a minute. Let's go and look at the centimeters to meter one. The centimeters to meter one, these are both in the English, in the SI system. So this one is also exact. Now, this one is a problem because it's unique among most of the conversion factors. In, I want to say it's the 1970s, they took the two rulers, the inches and the centimeters, and they lined them up. And what they found was that 1 inch was so close to 2.54, it was 2.54000. I think there was like four zeros that followed before the next non-zero digit materialized. And they were so close that they decided to make it a definition. And they actually changed the definition of the inch and how big an inch is. And an inch was redefined in terms of the metric system. And so there are two different inches in existence. There's an imperial inch, an inch that is based on the original definition of the inch. And there is a metric inch, surprisingly. And the metric inch is what we use today. And it is defined as exactly 2.54 centimeters. And so what we believe is the English system of measurement has actually been entirely redefined in terms of the metric system. And this is now a definition. It's unique in that all of the other English to SI conversion factors are not. They're all measured. But this one in the 1970s was set as a definition. And as such, it is exact. And so while it looks like it has three sig figs, it's unique in that it doesn't, that it's a definition. And so all of these, when I look at them, I have four sig figs to start. Everything else is exact. So none of these conversion factors will affect the outcome, which means that the outcome should have the same number of significant figures as the original starting value. So that means it's going to have four sig figs. And I would round it out to here at four sig figs. And this is going to be 340.8 meters. And then I would box in that answer. Boxing in the answer is a way of saying the problem is done. This is where the answer resides and makes it really easy on your instructor in terms of grading. So it's a great way to end a mathematical problem is to sit down and to box in that final answer. So that's how we go about doing that. All right. That was sort of a longer explanation, but it really does exemplify how we go through and tackle these word problems from start to finish. And this entire process is what is known as dimensional analysis. Now, why do we call it dimensional analysis? Dimensional analysis is the name that was given to it because literally what I'm doing here is I am cross-canceling units, dimensions, and I'm analyzing them to make sure that I'm canceling them, numerator to denominator, until I come out with a specific unit, or I analyze the units to make them come out correctly. That's the dimensional analysis component of how this process works. I've added in roadmaps, and roadmaps are sort of my flavor of doing problems because it takes a word problem and it reduces the problem down from the words into something that segues into the mathematical problem. And that segue helps you construct the problem and figure out what equalities you really need. And it also helps you to look at the equalities and do the sig fig analysis at the end. So that's the entire process. Now, a couple of things. Give me one of my setups here, the three keys. The three keys are something that I'm going to ask you to memorize. These are three key conversion factors. These three key conversion factors allow you to be able to convert back and forth between metric and SI system. So they are not the optimal conversion factors to use at any one time. Sometimes there's a conversion factor that you can look up in the book, and the book will have a table of different conversion factors. And if you want to know how many inches are in a meter, they might have an inch to meter conversion factor. But those things are hard to memorize. And if you look at the table, there's 20, 30 of them. And my pitch to you is that, yes, you could always do open book and open note and look at those and pull those and use those. But these three conversion factors, if you memorize them, allow you to do any of the problems without needing special conversion factors. You can get away with just using these three. And the reason is because these three, there's one for length, there's one for mass, and there's one for volume. And once you have length, mass, and volume, you can do just about anything it is that you want to do. So we're going to go from English to SI in these three. We've already done the length one. This one is 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters. And as we said, this one is exact. It's a definition. In the mass one, we're looking at 453.6. 453.6. Oh, and I went backwards. I want to do the English first. So let's say that this is 1 pound. There we go. Equals 453.6 grams. This one is measured. And it's measured to 4 sig figs. And the last one, English, we're going to go volume of gallons. So 1 gallon is going to be equal to 3.785 liters. This is also measured at 4 sig figs. Okay. And so with these three, if you memorize these three, then you can tackle just about any other problem that's given to you. The difference here is that now, once I'm in the SI system is all based on powers of 10. And so if I remember my powers of 10, and I remember my units in terms of centi, milli, kilo, mega, giga, and I remember what those prefixes mean and how they convert the SI units. And if I know a little bit about English unit of measure, particularly in the length, mass and volume, if they're more obscure English measures that we don't use very often, I will give them to you. And so you can expect that those will be given to you in the problem. Usually what I expect you to do is to memorize the three keys and the SI the SI units. So let's say here, memorize three keys and the metric prefixes. So in terms of the metric prefixes, the ones that I usually want you to memorize, let's start off with large. Kilo. Kilo, usually, see, how do I want to do it? We'll go kilo, and then we'll go base, and then we'll go centi, milli, and micro, we don't get into too much, but that's generally where we go from there. So kilo, the abbreviation is K, and this is times 10 to the third. The base doesn't have a prefix, and this is times 10 to the zero, which is one. Centi, this is a lowercase c. This is times 10 to the minus 2. Milli, lowercase m, times 10 to the minus 3. And micro uses the symbol mu, and this is times 10 to the minus 6. And so really, the three that we go for the most, centi, milli, kilo, and micro, if you can remember it and throw it in there, can be helpful on occasion. And those are the conversion factors for the metric prefixes that are good to look at. And I think I covered those in some of the other videos, but I just wanted to get them back in here to make sure. Okay, let's see where we're at and what we need to do. We've done a couple of examples of dimensional analysis. I did say that I wanted to hit temperatures. And I also wanted to hit density and specific gravity. So let's talk temperature for a little bit. Temperature conversions are a little bit different. In temperature, there are three different systems with temperature. We have the Fahrenheit system, we have a centigrade system, and I don't have it on there where I need to go. And we have the Kelvin system. And these systems, when we look at them, were built on different scales. So temperature scales and where they come from. The first temperature scale that we have is the Fahrenheit system, degrees Fahrenheit. This system starts off at the boiling point of water. So if we take and we look at something that, let's take a little pot here, put a flame under it, and that this has some water in it, and this is boiling water. So water here boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And at the bottom end of the scale, another reference point is where we take and we convert water into an ice cube. We freeze it. And this is at minus 32, actually not minus, just 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And the difference between these two points is 180 degrees. So there's a 180 degree difference between the Fahrenheit scale and on the boiling point of water and the freezing point of water. The boiling point of water and the freezing point of water are two really good points to look at in terms of temperature scales and definitions. Now, the Fahrenheit scale was actually not based on the boiling point of water. It was based more on a person's body temp and the 98.6 degrees. And that was one of the reference points that this thing was built on. It was done by Daniel Gabriel. It was developed in the, I want to say right around the turn of the 1700th century. So this was right around 1700 in terms of the year in which it was developed. Also, a little bit later than that, sometime around 1730s was developed the degrees Celsius scale. And Celsius scale was developed by Anders Celsius. And what they did, what Anders did, is to make this at 100 degrees Celsius and to set this at zero. And they decided that 100 degrees difference between these two points of the boiling point of water and the freezing point of water made much more sense. And it does. It makes much more sense because you have an even number, a nice round number of 100 degrees between the freezing point of water and the boiling point of water. And so 212 degrees Fahrenheit equals 100 degrees Celsius, and 32 degrees Fahrenheit equals 0 degrees Celsius. But there's a difference in the number of units, the divisions between each scale. So converting is not a simple matter of just addition and subtraction. We also have to do another component there. To make things even more complicated, we decided that we needed a different scale altogether. We needed the Kelvin scale. And the Kelvin scale was developed sometime in the, I want to say, 1850s. So these are just roundabout sort of years in which these things were developed. The Kelvin scale was developed as what's called an absolute scale. And as an absolute scale, there's no negative values. So Kelvin can go all the way down to what we call absolute zero. Absolute zero is a point where all motion stops. Temperature is related to motion. The faster something is moving, the hotter it is. When something absolutely stops moving at a molecular level, not just stopping motion like you're looking at a lamp that's sitting on a table, but if you were to take all the molecules within the lamp and you were to make all the molecules stop jiggling, then it would be at absolute zero. The freezing point of water in this scale is 273.15. And the boiling point is 373.15. And when we look at the units of division between them, it's 100 units. It's identical with the Kelvin scale, with the centigrade scale, with Celsius, but it has an absolute zero where this has no negative values. So it comes down and goes down to zero, and there are no negative values. That was important in linking motion to temperature because, as I said, when something is moving, how fast it's moving determines how hot it is. But when something stops moving, it goes to absolute zero. And what would happen if we had negative values? It would mean what? Well, because motion is related to temperature, you can't have negative motion. Once something stops, that's it. It's done moving and it can't move anymore. And so that absolute zero was there to verify that when all motion stops, we're at absolute zero and there's no negative values. These other scales all go down to negative values. So this could go down to minus 273.15. And this one can go all the way down to minus, I don't even know what it is. I don't even know if I have it. I do, 459.67. And those very strongly negative values represent the lowest possible temperatures that we can get on those scales. So now that we understand the scales, let's look at how we convert from one scale to the next. How do we take a temperature and convert it? Temperature conversions. Well, converting between degrees Celsius and going back and forth to Kelvin is actually relatively simple. We just add or subtract 273.15. So if you want to go from degrees Celsius to Kelvin, we take the degrees Celsius and we add to it 273.15, and that will equal Kelvin. If we want to go from Kelvin to degrees Celsius, we simply subtract. So Kelvin, subtract 273.15 would equal degrees Celsius. So converting back and forth there is fairly simple because all we have to do is what's called a phase shift. The units are both 100. So because both these numbers are 100, all I have to do is correct for the different level here. So to go from 100 to 373.15, I simply add the 273.15 to it. And the units will be consistent because they both have 100 units between them. So it only requires to shift the phase of where I'm sitting. But when I look at Fahrenheit and Celsius, I have not only a phase shift, but I have a unit shift. And I have to take care of the unit shift in addition to the phase shift. So this one's harder. So to go from degrees Fahrenheit back and forth to degrees Celsius, it requires a phase and unit. So here's how I do that. If I want to go from degrees Fahrenheit to degrees Celsius, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look and see at what I need to do here. I need to go from 32 to zero. So, and I need to take into account the phase shift here. And I always need to remind myself how I want to approach these. Let's take the degree Fahrenheit and let's do first the phase shift. I think I want to subtract 32 degrees from it. And then I want to take and I want to do the unit shift. And so this is going to take, just like I would do units, I'm going to put degrees Fahrenheit in the denominator and degrees Celsius in the numerator, and it is 180 degrees Fahrenheit for every 100 degrees Celsius. And that's going to convert me into degrees Celsius. If I turn that formula around, and I'll go through and I'll show you some examples of how we actually do these. And I want to go degrees Celsius to degrees Fahrenheit. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the degrees Celsius and I'm first going to do the conversion of the units so that I'm going to put degrees Celsius in the denominator, degrees Fahrenheit in the numerator. It is 100 degrees Celsius, 180 degrees Fahrenheit. And then I'm going to add to it 32 degrees Fahrenheit for the phase shift. Okay. Now, when you look in the textbook, you often see these reduced to a different sort of value. They take 100 divided by 180, and they convert this into a simpler fraction. And it's a number that you just wind up having to memorize. Trying to remember if it's 9/5 or what that actual fraction is. I never use it because to me, I always think about these units and reconstructing this just from first principles. And I just think back to what the scale is. And I use the values that are based on the units in the scale. And that's how I've always remembered it. And I always remember the zero point at 32 equals zero. And so I do that phase shift there. So let me show you. Let's take and do a couple temperature conversions. Let's convert. Let's see, what's the temp today? Where I'm sitting, our temperature is right around 82.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 2 degrees Celsius. So I want to convert 82.6 degrees Fahrenheit into degrees Celsius. So what I do is I look back and I find that Fahrenheit conversion factor. And the first thing that I do is I take 82.6 degrees Fahrenheit and subtract from it 32 degrees Fahrenheit. That's going to take care of the phase shift. And then I go through and I do the unit shift. 180 degrees Fahrenheit to 100 degrees C. And so mathematically, I'll solve this first part of the problem first. 82.6 subtract 32. I'll ask it for that part. Then I will multiply it by 100 and divide by 180. 28.11. And that one just keeps on repeating. All right, so when I do that, the question then becomes of sig figs. How many sig figs do I wind up keeping? And the answer is that these conversion factors are exact conversion factors. When I go back and I look at the units, these are exact numbers of units, 180 and 100 and 100. There's no decimal to these units. These units are exact round numbers and definitions. And so the number of sig figs in equals the number of sig figs out. There's no change in the number of sig figs. So when I come back over here and I look at how many sig figs I started with, I only need to look at my first number, 3 sig figs, which means that in my final value over here, I will also keep 3 sig figs. So I'll do my rounding and I'll report my final value, 28.1 degrees Celsius, and I'll box it in. If I wanted to take a number in degrees Celsius, and let's say that I wanted to do a number that was, let's do 75.72 degrees Celsius into degrees Fahrenheit. I want to see how to go through and do that. I do the reverse process. 75.72 degrees Celsius. The first thing that I'm going to do is look back at my formula. I'm going to do the phase shift. Actually, not the phase shift. That's the unit shift. I'm going to do the unit shift first and then the phase shift. So I have to turn this problem around. Multiply by 100 degrees Celsius over 180 degrees Fahrenheit. And then I'm going to add back the 32 degrees Fahrenheit to shift it from the zero back up to the 32. So mathematically, 75.72 times 180 divided by, lost a two in there, get back in there. And it's not going to like that decimal. There we go. Divided by 100. And then mathematically, I can just add 32 to it. Order of operations say that it's going to do the multiplication and division before the addition. We always need to be careful with that. If we wanted to be really careful, here's the way that I would be really careful. In the calculator, I would use parentheses. And I would place parentheses around each one of these. And then it would do everything in the parentheses first, and then it would add the 32 at the end. Let's see what we get. We get 168.269. That's going to be now degrees Fahrenheit. And sig figs, we go back and we check. Where did we start? And we'll end in the same place. So we had 4 sig figs to start with. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'll do my rounding at the 10th position. This one, the 6 is larger than 5, so I'm going to round up. The 2 will become a 3. And this will equal 168.3 degrees Fahrenheit. So let's just check and think about this for a second. Where was 75.72 degrees Celsius? That's 3/4 of the way up towards boiling. So I would have been like right around in here, 3/4 of the way between freezing and boiling. And that would have shifted me here. I would be below 212. And I am a good ways below 212, 168.3. So that's a reasonable number in terms of the temperature conversion. So that's how we do temperature conversions between Celsius and Fahrenheit, and how we do it between degrees Celsius and Kelvin. Now, the question might be, well, what if I want to go Fahrenheit to Kelvin? You could develop an entirely new calculation, or the easier way to do it is go from Fahrenheit to Celsius and then just add 273. Or if you want to go from Kelvin back to Fahrenheit, first subtract 273, go to Celsius, and then use the conversion to Fahrenheit from Celsius to Fahrenheit. That's the easiest way to do it, rather than making a whole new equation. So let's say we just have two things to memorize. We just have the first part here, addition and subtraction of 273.15. And in the Fahrenheit to Celsius, we have these equations. If you want to use the ones in the book that are slightly easier, that just have a reduced fraction here, that's great. I'm just fine with that. They work perfectly. The important part is to remember that they're based on the units that are between the two different temperature scales. Okay. Last thing to talk about today, density and specific gravity. Let's talk about density a little bit. Density is a property of matter. All matter has density. We talked about this in the lab a little bit, and we went through density, but I didn't formally do it in terms of lecture. So let's talk about density and specific gravity. Density is a property of matter because density is a ratio of the mass to volume of a material. Let's say of an object. Or a material. Because all matter has mass. And all matter has volume. Then all matter has a density. And that density is defined as the mass divided by the volume, the ratio of the two. So we're simply taking whatever object it is, and we're taking its mass, and we're taking its volume, and we're dividing the mass by the volume. When we look at different materials, be them a gas or a solid or a liquid, the units that we use for density are sometimes a little bit different. The units that we use for a gas tend to be grams per liter. And I tend to write them with a slash, but that slash really is represented this way, grams over liters. It is that density has two units associated with it. When I look at a liquid, liquids are grams over milliliters, or we could say grams represented over milliliters, and solids, grams over milliliters as well. Although we also have a different unit that we use here sometimes, grams over milliliters, or sometimes what we see is grams over cubic centimeters. And it can be written a number of different ways. Sometimes we see cc. Cc, where cc stands for cubic centimeters. The idea there is that when you take a cubic centimeter, an object that is a cube, and that cube measures 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter, and I want to take its volume, it becomes 1 centimeter times 1 centimeter times 1 centimeter. And this equals 1 centimeter cubed. A centimeter cubed is exactly the same amount of volume as 1 milliliter. And because of that, we interchangeably use cubic centimeters and milliliters. However, we oftentimes use the cubic centimeters for solids because of the regular solid shape of a cube. And liquids, we oftentimes use just milliliters, although cubic centimeters, cc's, can sometimes be used for liquids, particularly in hospital settings. When you're looking at a volume in a syringe and we're looking at how many cubic centimeters there are, or cc's, you oftentimes hear it on TV and medical things. Give me 10 cc's, 100 cc's, right? How many cc's they are, they're saying cubic centimeters. And so interchangeably, cubic centimeters and milliliters can be used interchangeably in that way. All of these materials have densities that can be obtained by measuring out the mass and the volume and then calculating out what the actual density is. So densities are measured. They're measured properties. And not only are they measured properties, but they are specific to temperatures, or I should say that a density will change with temperatures. So they are measured properties and reported at the temperature they are measured at. When a material heats up, oftentimes that material expands. As it expands, the volume changes, but the mass does not. Mass is independent of temperature. And so what we see is that when we look at an object, if we measure the density of an object, and we look at, let's say here we have an object that is cold and hot. And let's say that this is the object here that I'm measuring that is cold. And then the object that I'm measuring that is hot, that has expanded, same object, it's just changed in its size. So this would be representative of its volume, representative of its mass. And let's say that its volume here is at 50 milliliters, and its mass here is 73 grams, and it's expanded here, and it's maybe now hot, and it's now at, let's say, 60 milliliters, but its mass does not change. It's still at 73 grams, and let's say that this is at 0 degrees C, and maybe 100 degrees C, so I'm looking at what happens to it. Its density would change. And so the density here, remember, it's grams over milliliters. This would be 73 grams divided by 50. Let's give it a decimal, milliliters. We'll look at that density. And this one would be 73 grams divided by 60 milliliters. We'll give it also a decimal. And let's get both of these values and look at what happens to this object. 73 divided by 50. This is 1.46 grams per milliliter. And this one, 73 divided by 60, 1.216. And that number was going to be a repeating 666 all the way out, grams per milliliter. And I'll put sig figs on these in just a second. So let's say that if I was looking at this and I was doing sig figs, this would be 2 sig figs and 2 sig figs. I'll just track it here, 2 and 2, meaning that this number would have to be reported as 2. This would be 1.5 grams per milliliter. And this one, again, 2 and 2. So I get to keep 2 here. This would be 1.2 grams per milliliter. So there's how we would report the city pigs there. Notice that the density over here, the density went down because in the denominator got larger and the density went down. Density is a function of temperature and changes with temperature. So we oftentimes see when we report a density, we oftentimes report it with its temperature so we know what temperature that density was taken at. Okay, now all objects have a density. All we need to do is measure their mass and their volume. That was part of the lab that you guys did or were supposed to do if you haven't done it yet. I'm gonna put a due date on that for next week. So you might wanna get on that if you haven't done it yet. But density can be used also as an equality that equates a material's volume with its mass. So not only is density a property of all material, density can be an equality. And we can use it for different types of problems. So the types of problems that we can see number one, find a density. Given mass or volume. Let's say not mass or volume, mass and volume. Number two, find a volume given a density. Number three could be find a mass given a volume and density. Those are the three types of problems that generally come up. Most of the time when people are trying to find a volume or find a mass, they think, oh, this is a mathematical problem I need to solve for X. In reality, it doesn't have to be that way. It can be a straight up dimensional analysis problem using density as a conversion factor. Let me give you an example. Let's go through and do a simple one. And then we'll talk a little bit about specific gravity. Okay, here's an example. Let's say that the density of iron symbol is Fe, is 7.86 grams per cubic centimeter. How many grams would a block of iron weigh if its volume was 394.7 cubic centimeters? Okay, so how do we go through and do this? Same way that we did before. Number one, we want to identify the desired. I want to know how many grams. This is my desired. I want to identify my given. The given here, there's a couple of different values. The tendency is to just go straight and grab the first one and say the first one is the given. But I'm going to give you a heads up. that when things have two units, they are generally not the given. Generally, when things have two units, they are an equality. The thing that has just the one unit, that's the thing that is generally the given. 394.7 cubic centimeters is my given. And this guy, this density that has multiple units, this is an equality. And we're going to take and we're going to strip it out and we're going to write it as an equality. When I have something that has two units in it like this, the way that I read this is I read it this way. 7.86 grams equals equality one cubic centimeter. That's how I read that. And that's the density. Now, why can I strip it out like that? Why can I take it and break the units apart and put an equality between them? Because literally what that value says, when I read that, it says 7.86 grams over, and the cubic centimeters are usually sitting over here with the grams, but you can imagine that there's a one in the denominator with that unit. And that means that it is 7.86 grams over one cubic centimeter, or 7.86 grams equals one cubic centimeter. And so I can take those and write those interchangeably. Now, the difference here is that when it is in this frame, 7.86 is in the numerator. When it's over here, 7.86 is no longer in the numerator. It is now just an equality. And I can use it as I need to. This is extremely important, to be able to take a density or something with multiple units, strip it out of this form and put it into the equality form. Let me show you why. Because now, roadmap wise, what we're going to do is we are going to go from cubic centimeters, and I want to convert this into grams. And I need a cubic centimeter to gram conversion factor. Well, I've got one. This is a gram to cubic centimeter conversion factor. And it allows me to go directly from cubic centimeters to grams. And the equality that I'm using for that arrow is 7.86 grams equals one cubic centimeter. Now, this is just a straightforward problem. All I need to do is write out the mathematical problem, 394.7. cubic centimeters, multiply by my equality, my conversion factor. Cubic centimeters goes in the denominator. Remember that trick? And my desired, the unit that I want, grams, is going to go up in my numerator. So this part of my roadmap comes down over here. And now I just fill in the values. 7.86 grams goes with one cubic centimeter. And now it's just mathematical, 394.7 times 7.86 divided by 1, 394.7 times 7.86 divided by 1. Big number. As we would expect. And then there's one more step. The last step is always sig figs. So we go back and we look at the sig figs that were associated with each one of these. There are four sig figs in this value. Densities are always measured. They are never definitions. So the density always carries sig figs. This one has three. I get to keep my smallest number, which is going to make for a tricky rounding situation here. So I need to round to the tens place, and that is going to round to a zero. So this number is going to be 3100 grams. But I don't like that, because when I look at that number is now two sig figs. And I wanted three. That's not helping me. If I make it 3100 and I include the decimal as the textbook recommends, now it's four sig figs. That's not helping me. I created a difficult problem here for the sig fig answer. I want 3 sig figs. And I got to figure out, how do I get 3 sig figs? How do I indicate that the tens place is the place that I want to round to? I have to use scientific notation. 3.10 times 10 now to the third power grams. And this is now 3 sig figs. Allowed me to do a nice little review there. And that's the answer that I want to box in. All of those have 3,100 as a value, but each one of those has a different number of sig figs. 3,100, by our rules, would be 2. 3,100 with a decimal, by our rules, would be 4. 3.10 times 10 to the third would be 3, and would be the right answer. But notice that instead of solving for x out of this problem, we took it and we did it as a standard dimensional analysis problem. And that's how we did it. Okay, now, what is this thing called specific gravity, and what the heck do I do with that? Specific gravity is related to density. In fact, it is a density. It's just measured in a different way. Here's a question. What is the density of the ocean or a lake? Well, if we wanted to really know the density of the ocean, we would have to capture all the water, measure its volume, and measure its mass. But that's an enormously challenging task. We can never actually do it because there's too much water there, and we would never actually capture all of it. You say, well, we'll just take a sample of it. We could just take a sample of it. But as we take a sample of it, what happens is we find out the density of that sample and not the density of the overall thing. If it were 100% homogeneous, that would work and that would be fine. But this presents a challenge. When we have a liquid and we want to take the density of the liquid, how do we do that easily without having to measure the mass and the volume? And the answer is we use a special measuring device. The measuring device looks like this. It's a glass tube. The glass tube inside it has a paper scale. And the scale has all these numbers on it. And at the bottom, it opens up and it comes out, and there is a lead weight that is set inside this ball. And the rest of this is air. And this is usually a lead weight. And what they do is they take this thing and they set it in water at a specific temperature at 4 degrees Celsius. So they take a very tall beaker of water. And this is water at 4 degrees Celsius. The reason is at 4 degrees Celsius, water becomes its most dense. And then as water starts to freeze, it expands and it becomes less dense. But at 4 degrees C, this is where water actually gets its most dense. And at this temperature, the density of water equals 1.000 with 4 sig figs grams per milliliter. And what they do is they take this thing and they put it in here and they set it in the water. And it floats at a specific point. And wherever it floats, they adjust that piece of paper to be 1.000. And they call this specific gravity, SPG. And now the device is calibrated. And they can take this device and they can put it into other liquids. And when they place it in other liquids, it will float higher. Or it will float lower depending on the density of the material it's floating in. and you read the specific gravity off of the ruler. And now we don't have to take a volume and we don't have to take a mass. We just have to use this device called a hydrometer. Hydrometers can be calibrated for different liquids so that they will work better in different liquids. And so the calibrations is not always up against water. Sometimes it's up against another liquid, but they have devices that are calibrated for measuring fruit juices, devices that are at a doctor's office for measuring urine, devices that are at, in an oil refinery where they're measuring gasolines and other things, and they can tell the specific gravity of those. So what specific gravity is, the definition of it, specific gravity equals the density of an object in grams per milliliter divided by the density of water at 4 degrees Celsius, which equals 1.000 grams per milliliter. So what happens here is the units cancel and you're dividing by one. So you don't change the value. So the value of specific gravity is exactly the same as the value of the density of object in grams per milliliter. It just is a unitless value. So specific gravity is unitless because these units cancel. Come on, click in. And I meant to cancel all the units. Should cancel it that way. So that the units cancel out. And that means that this is a unitless value. So if you want to go to specific gravity, you simply divide by 1.00 grams per milliliter. And if you want to, you take the density of the object and divide it by 1.00 grams per milliliter. If you want to go from specific gravity back to density, you simply multiply by 1.00 grams per milliliter. Essentially, all you do is put the units back on it and it becomes a density. But they're measured and taken inherently in a different way. So that's the explanation with specific gravity and how it's a little bit different and how it's measured. But essentially, it is a density. It's just unitless because it's being compared to the density of water. And if we want to convert it into a density, we simply put the units on it, back on it, grams per milliliter, and we take it that way. Okay, I've gone about 10 minutes over what I wanted to do, but that covers everything that we need to do for this last chapter. And from here on, it's really about practice and you guys getting some homework practice. So I'm gonna go online, I'm gonna update the Canvas shell, I'm gonna upload this video up onto the Canvas shell, and I'm also going to put the homework in there so that you have the homework and practice problems to do, and I'll put a due date on it. And we'll kick this thing into high gear and we'll get things rolling, okay? I'm gonna end the video here, and I wish you guys a good week. And remember office hours, that I'll be online for office hours, for all my office hours this week, I'll be online. Those links are in the Canvas shell. You're welcome to join in at any time. And I'm always available for questions on email as well. So be well, hang in there, and we'll see you soon. All right, let me stop the video and I'll get to work and get these things uploaded.